Welcome to Wild Utah, the podcast of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I'm your host, Dave Pacheco. In this episode, we spend some time with Neil Clark, SUA's Wildlands Program Director. Neil is based out of our Moab office, and he heads up a team that monitors all actions that BLM proposes throughout the state and holds the agency accountable when those actions have the potential to impair wilderness values, particularly in those areas proposed as wilderness in America's Red Rock Wilderness Act. In a nutshell, Neil manages SUA's field staff and essentially makes sure that bad things don't happen to the lands we care about. Neil and his team have spent a lot of time in recent months working on legislation that's been proposed to change land management in Emery County, Utah. A bill titled Emery County Public Land Management Act of 2018 is sponsored by Senator Orrin Hatch and Representative John Curtis from Utah. In order to understand what this bill does, we're going to shine a bright light on it today with perhaps the person who spent the most time analyzing this legislation through a critical lens. Neil, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So many SUA supporters, especially those here along the Wasatch Front, had their first Red Rock experience in the San Rafael region, either hiking or floating along the Green River through Emery County. For those not familiar, and to remind everyone what lands are at stake, take a moment here and describe some of the unique landscape that this legislation addresses.
Sure. You know, taking a step back, Emery County is a county that includes about 1.4 million acres of lands proposed for wilderness designation in America's Red Rock Wilderness Act. As part of this, you have landscapes such as the San Rafael Swell, sort of the iconic canyon country of the Swell, Desolation Canyon, probably one of the most remote and intact wilderness landscapes in the lower 48, certainly in Utah. Labyrinth Canyon, known by many as a world-class multi-day flatwater river trip. And then the San Rafael Badlands, which are really a culturally rich landscape, including places like Mullen Reef, Upper Muddy Creek, Eagle Canyon, and really a place that we're just starting to learn about the depth and importance of the cultural resources.
You know, as I mentioned, you have spent a lot of time analyzing the language of this bill and poring over the map that's associated with it. The bill was introduced in early May, and it had a hearing in the House Federal Lands Subcommittee in late June. Go ahead and give us a feel for SUA's overall take on this legislation.
Yeah, the overall take is really that this bill would be worse than the status quo. I mentioned the 1.4 million acres of proposed wilderness in the county. This bill would protect less land as wilderness than is currently managed for protection of wilderness character. So that's BLM wilderness study areas, as well as natural areas. It releases part of a wilderness study area for coal mining. It's going to hand management control of really high-value federal lands around the San Rafael Reef to the state of Utah. And in those areas, the anticipation is that they could develop those places and charge fees to the public for access. It fails to resolve revised statute 2477. It's RS-2477, it's typically called. These are the roads lawsuits filed by the state of Utah, and it fails to resolve those for areas that are designated wilderness under the bill. Finally, it includes a land exchange between the state of Utah, the School Institutional Trust Lands Administration, and the Bureau of Land Management. And as part of that, it fails to include safeguards that would ensure protection of tribal interests, as well as protect lands with wilderness characteristics, sort of sensitive landscapes. For all of those reasons, we really feel like this would be a step backwards for the situation on the ground as it is today.
Yeah, that step backwards is really what I'd like to focus on here. So let's get into one of those problems that you just mentioned, starting with the way that the bill designates routes in the proposed national conservation area. So what does the bill do exactly with roads and routes in Emery County, and why is this so problematic for the land and for SUA?
Yeah, the bill as it stands currently would cherry stem all of the motorized routes in the proposed national conservation area in wilderness areas. And what this is, cherry stem is really a term of art that typically applies to wilderness areas. But what it means effectively is that, it would enshrine the existing travel plan as well as some additional routes that the county would like to see open that are currently closed under BLM's current travel plan. And this is important in that There was a settlement reached in 2017 between SUA and some other conservation organizations, the Trump administration, and some off-road vehicle groups that is going to require the Bureau of Land Management to go back and revisit those travel plans because a court did deem them illegal. And what this would do is really undermine that settlement agreement and enshrine those existing travel routes as they stand today. You know, this also has the effect of cutting up protected areas, wilderness, and the National Conservation Area as it's proposed, really cutting it up with these quote-unquote excluded roads. And it really just would, at the end of the day, create a very bizarre and difficult management situation for the Bureau of Land Management.
So essentially, this is an end run around BLM's process to go out and actually do the on-the-ground surveys that are required by law, but required by the lawsuit and the settlement that was made. And this bill just stops that process cold.
Absolutely, yeah. And in a nutshell, the court determined that the BLM had failed to consider impacts of its motorized route designations on cultural and natural resources. They're going to have to go and do that now. And we're confident that that's going to result in a much better travel plan that really does protect resources. What this would do is absolutely sidestep that process and effectively enshrine those routes in perpetuity.
So earlier you mentioned that the bill omits some places in Emory County that SUA, the Utah chapter of the Sierra Club, and Conservation Allies have long advocated for. You mentioned some of the names. So take a moment and elaborate on some of the areas in this bill that the bill must include in order to gain the conservationist support.
Sure. I think before we even get to the places, I think, you know, first and foremost, this cherry stem issue is something that has to be corrected. It's effectively a non-starter for SUA and for a lot of other organizations that are working on this bill. In addition to that, you know, the bill has got to go further for wilderness protection. The two primary areas are really Muddy Creek, which is, you know, located at the southern portion of the swell, abutting Wayne County, really one of the large intact wilderness landscapes in the San Rafael Swell. And then also Labyrinth Canyon. As currently proposed, the bill would protect a portion of the western side of Labyrinth Canyon, which is the Emory County side. The eastern side of the canyon is actually Grand County, and we believe that, you know, you need to protect that whole canyon system as one. You need to take this opportunity to protect that as wilderness on both sides, and also in addition to even what they're proposing on the western Emory County side. And then finally, you know, they need to do something to protect the San Rafael Badlands. We've proposed a national conservation area designation there, focused on cultural resource protection. And so, you know, these are three real significant landscapes that we think have to be added as to move the conservation ledger to a point where we might find the bill acceptable. I think it's worth saying, you know, in addition, they've got to fix the land exchange language. You know, they need to ensure that the state can't acquire sensitive landscapes. You know, one thing I failed to mention earlier is, as it's currently drafted, the state could actually acquire current BLM lands in the areas that were excised from Grand Staircase and Bears Ears National Monument. So there's nothing saying that the state couldn't acquire lands in those areas for development purposes. And then we really are not enthusiastic about the idea of transferring control of federal lands to the state so that they can develop them with amenities and charge fees for what are currently free public lands.
So these land exchanges, when they're done properly, really do benefit all parties, right? I mean, when the exchange came out of Grand Staircase, there was a big block of land that the state obtained. Then Governor Leavitt explained that it was like the biggest single infusion of money into the state school trust that has ever been done. So when done right, it can really be beneficial to all parties in terms of money there, but also in terms of conservation and conserving lands intact.
Absolutely. You know, the scattered state sections aren't doing a whole lot for SITLA's coffers. You know, the concern becomes where do they acquire blocks of land when you trade them out of these protected areas. You have to assume development, fossil fuel development, real estate development, take your pick, essentially worst case scenario for these lands. And so it's very important to make sure that there are safeguards or sideboards rather to protect sensitive public lands.
Yeah, and one of those areas that you mentioned before, this the Badlands area, kind of to the west of the Muddy Creek area, isn't that one of the areas that's targeted for potential fossil fuel development should they not be protected in this bill?
The county views that area as important to its future mineral development. When you look at the facts on the ground, that really doesn't play out. There are no active wells in that area. There have been lease sales with very little interest, no competitive leases purchased in that area. They've had a few over-the-counter purchases. There's no infrastructure. It's really a pipe dream of the county, and it's unfortunate that that's getting in the way of really conserving this sensitive cultural landscape.
So let's move on to some of the things that the Utah politicians are talking about right now regarding this legislation. So Representative Curtis is on record as stating that the bill is a win for everybody and that it strikes a delicate balance. What's Sua's take on those kinds of words coming from this Utah delegation at this point?
It's hard to take that seriously in a lot of ways. I mean, make no mistake, the bill that's been introduced and they've had a hearing on to date is the county's proposal. It's Emery County's proposal. It was drafted by the county. It's 100% what the county would like to see in this area. The county and the delegation have really been unwilling to engage in meaningful negotiations with the conservation community. They've failed completely to solicit input from all public land users, even in the state of Utah, you know, folks in the Wasatch Front, Salt Lake area. This is really county-driven, as they would admit, and it really would result in a benefit to the county and not move the ball forward in a significant way for conservation.
So essentially, we've got America's public lands in a county in Utah, and the decision makers are giving the biggest word to just the county residents and to the exclusion of the American public. Is that what it sounds like to me?
Oh, absolutely. It's there's no secret about the fact that the county has been given a veto power over how this bill plays out. And if they don't like something, they certainly have the outsized voice in the room. The delegation is not interested in hearing from the greater public. They really want something that will make the county happy, regardless of how it affects the land and regardless of the viewpoints of others living outside of that rural Utah county.
But again, let's be clear, the decision ultimately rests with the U.S. Congress, right?
Well, absolutely. At the end of the day, if the bill is to become law, it's going to have to work its way through both houses of Congress.
So, we've talked about this bill, but I want to put it in a little bit more perspective in terms of the overall movement for Utah wilderness. So kind of taking a step back and to kind of look at the longer picture here, the local conservation community has had a long-running effort to protect Utah's remaining wild red rock places. How does this bill compare to past Utah delegation bills on public land? I know we had one in the 90s, and we'll occasionally get a bill that's introduced here and there. There was like the infamous Public Lands Initiative recently. Kind of put this one in perspective of where it fits in with all the rest of those.
Yeah, this bill is, it's a little bit like hotel room coffee. You know, it doesn't really matter where you are. It's all pretty bad. And this sort of is in line with the history of bills that we've seen from Emery County. In some ways, it's worse from a land protection perspective than what was proposed in Congressman Rob Bishop's Public Lands Initiative. That was a lands process that was ongoing for a few years ago. While these bills have changed a little bit over the years, we're really seeing a lot of the same proposals, a lot of the same boundaries. In some ways, it's the definition of insanity, where you continue doing the same thing, hoping for a different outcome. And thus far, we know what the outcome is when they propose county-driven, sort of status quo at best bills, and that's that they end up dying in Washington, D.C.
So considering the current political landscape, is this... does this bill stand more of a chance considering who's in the White House and the way Congress is set up right now? In other words, there's an election in a few months here, and then the Congress turns over in January. How does this bill's prospects look in terms of the current Congress?
I don't think it's going to be a surprise to anyone for me to say that passing legislation under the current political climate is extremely difficult. And public lands bills are no exception. Wilderness bills are no exception to that situation. And so it's extremely difficult under any circumstances, even with, you know, controlling the legislature and the White House. It's still a difficult process. There's also a short window to work with, as you mentioned. There's an election coming up and a changing of the guard soon after. And so, you know, I think, and then to really cap it off, we have really amazing congressional champions that support America's Red Rock Wilderness Act and support wilderness in Utah. And they're going to fight to ensure that bad legislation for public lands in the state doesn't become law. And that's a significant hurdle that they're going to have to get past if they're going to try to just ram through your standard county proposal, which is what we're seeing now. So without broad support from the conservation community, which is something that they're going to have to get if they think they're going to really have a shot at moving this thing through. And at this point, we're just not seeing the willingness to negotiate and to talk seriously about what it's going to take to get support from the conservation community.
And when you talk about the conservation community, I mean, you're talking about here locally, SUA as the group that has been working on this Red Rock Wilderness issue for 35 years, but also partner conservation organizations across the country. So maybe name a few of those groups. Who is it that really does support broad protections for these lands?
Yeah, we've worked with our partners at the Utah Wilderness Coalition, which includes the Sierra Club and the Natural Resources Defense Council. Also, our colleagues at the Wilderness Society, National Parks Conservation Association has weighed in as well. So there's a diverse set of voices in the conservation world that are speaking out against this bill, have looked at this bill and realize it's not even close to a point that it's going to need to be at to really get broad support. And the support, as I mentioned, that it's going to need to move this thing actually into law.
And so when we talk about conservation organizations, we're not just talking about organizations, right? I mean, these groups have the power of millions of donors and people who care about these things, right?
Absolutely. I mean, organizations are nothing but their members. And so, yes, we're talking about millions of Americans and public landowners at the end of the day.
Well, I'm sure those millions of Americans appreciate the work that you're doing on this. Let me ask you about... beyond this Congress. So if the Utah politicians don't quite, you know, get to the point where they can pass this legislation and it gets signed off through the Congress in this kind of short window, what do you think they'll do? Do you think they'll come back with the same bill next year, or will they move on to another county? I mean, what do you think their strategy is?
It's hard to say. You know, Emory County has long wanted a lands bill for the county on the county's terms. There is a window. I think they see a window with Senator Hatch retiring at the end of the year. My take is that this is their opportunity possibly to pass the county's bill, to pass a bad piece of legislation. If nothing happens, and as I think is the most likely outcome, they may come back with another piece of legislation, but it's going to have to be better. And they may realize, as often happens, that you have to have broad support. And you're going to have to work with SUA and others working in Utah to protect these lands if you want to have a shot at actually doing something meaningful for conservation.
Yeah, and I want to talk about a case where this actually happened. So there was such a bill that was passed back in 2009 that was for one of the counties in Utah, Washington County, down where St. George is. And that ended up being a bill where there was... agreement that was reached between the conservation community and then Senator Bennett. Explain how that all kind of came about, and is that possible again this time?
Well, I think it's going to take a lot more consensus building and a lot more negotiation with stakeholders to get to that kind of point. And if you recall in the Washington County legislation, that was not the first go at that bill. The first version was quite worse, and it was defeated. And you know, they came back and realized essentially what I was setting out is that you have to really work with stakeholders. You need to have a deliberate process. Trying to ram through a one-sided proposal, which is what we have now, is just not an effective way to take what is an idea and make it into law.
So it did take more than one Congress to get through that process, right?
Absolutely. It took essentially learning the lesson that it's going to take more than just trying to push something through on the backs of the Utah delegation.
Great. So one last question for you. Kind of give us an update on where exactly we're at with this. I understood, as I asked before, there was a hearing in the House, and there's more action tabbed for the Senate, I presume, coming up?
Yeah, we're hearing that there may be a hearing in the Senate Natural Resources Committee on the 22nd of August. That has not been finalized, to the best of my knowledge. And then from there, you're probably at some point, if the bill continues to move forward, going to see a markup of the bill in the House. And then from there, it's unclear exactly where this is going to go. I think it's worth noting, you know, from recent conversations we've had, it actually seems like the bill might be steering in even a worse direction than it is now, removing some conservation designations and instead inserting language like recreation areas in order to essentially justify the cherry-stemmed routes that we discussed at the start of the program.
Getting worse, not better, huh?
It doesn't seem to be trending in the right direction right now.
Well, maybe that doesn't come as a surprise considering this Congress. So, you know, I think that that's a pretty good wrap of the bill here. We really appreciate you taking time to discuss this Emery County bill with us today, Neil, coming on up from Moab, and giving us an idea of what's going to happen with this bill. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
To stay informed about current events at SUA, visit us at sua.org. Check out the Get Involved tab to discover the most effective ways you can join the movement to protect wild Utah and personally be a part of the solution. Get information and alerts via text message by texting Utah to 52886. That's by texting Utah to 52886. Follow SUA on Facebook. We're Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. On Instagram, we're at Protect Wild Utah. And on Twitter, we're at Southern UT Wild. On behalf of SUA, I'm Dave Pacheco. Thanks for listening in on this episode of Wild Utah. We hope you can join us next time. Stay tuned.